Thank you for standing by, and welcome to the Quarter Three Trading Update conference call. At this time, all participants are in listen-only mode. There will be a presentation followed by a question-and-answer session, during which, if you wish to ask a question, you will need to press star one on your telephone. Please be advised that this conference is being recorded today, January 21st, 2016. I would now like to hand the conference over to your speaker today, Gavin Darby. Thank you. Please go ahead.
Thank you very much. Good morning to everybody. I'm joined here by Alistair, of course, our Chief Financial Officer. Just, I'm sure you've read our trading statement, but just four brief overall introductory points, and then I think we will cut straight to Q&A. We chose the word solid to describe the trading performance, and that's the way we absolutely see it. I think because the context is against the background of food price inflation, certainly negative two, maybe even softer than that. And if you pick your way through the announcements, the trading, the Christmas quarter trading results of most of the major supermarkets, I think you can see food price deflation in the range of minus one to minus two. So in that context, flat, while not as strong as we are forecasting and we believe we will deliver, I think is a solid performance. And the major issue, and we absolutely loathe ever referencing the weather, was December. I think it's fair to say that Alistair and I, after October and November, were spoiling to get to the 21st of January and a trading statement, and December was disproportionately warm. Unexpectedly mild, the warmest December since records began, and that really took the shine off the momentum we had in grocery. Second point, it is important, though, to step through the impact of weather on December on grocery, and I think we are extremely proud and confident in the performance of Sweet Treats and in international. It's important to recognize that plus 6.5% revenue is a very strong number. I'm sure that is understood, but perhaps also to recognize we're now cycling. This is the fifth quarter, really, since the fifth quarter of momentum we've had since we relaunched Kipling back, in the latter part of 2014. So I think when you start cycling success and cycling strong prior quarters, then that really shows you've got underlying momentum. So Kipling had a good quarter. Cadbury had a disproportionately good quarter. Again, only 18 to 24 months ago, Cadbury was in the more than 5% revenue decline category. It was in other brands, if you remember, or support brands, as we used to describe it, and it was the big drag on support brands. So we're now in rude health and strong growth, and that was driven by innovation and new products in the quarter. And international, still a small part of the whole portfolio, but growing 10% in constant currency. We're investing significantly in international, and I'm very excited about where that will go. So third point, we reiterated in our trading statement in the RNS that we're comfortable with our full-year forecast. So yes, a bump for grocery in the road in the 1 month of December. Of course, it's an important month, but we're confident, and we wouldn't be restating our confidence if we weren't comfortable with where we will end up in the financial year. And then fourth point, as we look to the balance of the year and into the rest of 16, you'll recall that we have significantly dialed up our innovation rate. I think at the half year we demonstrated about triple the rate of innovation relative to more than just a year ago. And that continues in this fourth quarter. Paul Hollywood, we announced at our interim results that the Paul Hollywood range will be on the shelves in February. Ambrosia really is one of our most important brands, but has had to wait and wait and wait through to 2016 as we've begun to, we've worked our marketing and innovation program through our brand portfolio. Ambrosia is very much core and key to 2016 and the first new product launch. Ambrosia frozen custard ice cream also coming in this fourth quarter. And as one of the people have pointed out, as we've been talking about an unusually warm December, then it's good to have a summer focused product in the portfolio, not entirely accidental. So Mr. Kipling, innovation stream going on the snack pack investment. You're aware of, we need to fill up that snack pack line. We're launching in this quarter two products under an exceedingly good range with some kind of disproportionately wholesome ingredients. So we're excited by that. Premium cupcakes as well under the Kipling brand. So bottom line, we are happy to reiterate that because of this investment in marketing, because of the investment and the accelerated investment in innovation, you know, we continue to believe and guide to the fact we can grow our branded sales 1-2%, you know, from next financial year, and we're happy to stick to that commitment. So with those as four overall introductory statements, I think we'll cut straight to Q&A.
We will now begin the question and answer session. If you wish to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone and wait for your name to be announced. If you wish to cancel your request, please press the pound or hash key. And again, if you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone. And the first question comes from the line of Karine Elias.
Hi, thanks for taking my questions. I just had a couple. Just going back to your comments on the performance of Oxo and Bisto despite the weather, we've seen a good traction there, and this is really on the back of the range review. I was wondering whether you could give us a little bit of color. Nigel, you've got a couple more months basically on your belt since that review has been done with Tesco, whether you're seeing more traction in sales on the back of a higher shelf space. And then secondly, you've obviously talked about the milder December, and I know it's probably difficult to extract the impact from the weather, but could you maybe give us a sense of the differential or between the monthly performance or at least a description of the trends October, November versus December, and are you seeing that reversing in January? Thank you.
Well, I'll talk, Karine, just very gently on the first one and see what Alistair adds to the second one. I mean, you're right that there remains a very strong correlation between where we've invested in the brands in both marketing and innovation and their continued performance. We started off over the first 9 months of this journey on Oxo, Bisto, Kipling, and Cadbury, and all four of them performed really well, even, you know, in the environment that we just described, so really well in the third quarter. Oxo and Bisto have been the beneficiaries, therefore, of quite a significant dial-up in marketing, and both of them in terms of innovation, and they grew, they performed well. They grew in the third quarter, despite the fact that the flavorings and seasonings category took a knock in December. So the correlation remains strong. I'll give you one, you know, incremental statistic. I think Bisto, you know, within a subset of flavorings and seasonings, which is the gravy, had its highest market share that we've ever recorded. So continued reinforcement and validation, basically, of the premise that if we market these brands and innovate them, you know, they grow and not just, you know, grow for a period of time, you know, for more than 1 year. Alistair, we were talking... Well, Karine's second question was more to do with the impact really of weather and December.
Yeah,
the quarter.
I mean, it was a milder quarter. Of the last 8 weeks of the quarter, 7 were actually milder than 2014, and all 4 weeks in December were milder. December on average, which is the most important month for us, was 3.5 degrees warmer than the prior year and the warmest since records began. In terms of our sensitivity to weather, it varies substantially across the portfolio. This is really a grocery effect. It has much less impact within the sweet treats business. We have previously quoted numbers along the lines of 1 degree can be anything between, we think, probably about 1% of sales at the most extreme. It may be going up towards 2 or 3 at the more sensitive products. If you think about things like soup, for instance, that is particularly sensitive. So in terms of where the weather really kicked in and hit us, it was really to do with December. That was, as I say, unexpected. And it was unexpected when we gave the guidance that we gave at the time of the November interims. In terms of January, I think the answer that I have to give there is that obviously the statement only runs up to December, so I can't comment on current trading, but we'll clearly tell you how the Q4 is going when we give our prelim announcement in May.
Great, thank you.
And your next question comes from the line of Clive Black.
Morning, guys.
Good morning.
Good morning. Glad to see that suntanned Mr. Hollywood's going to be hitting the shelves soon. A few questions, if I may. I'll just spiel them out and then you can have a go. Firstly, you talk about your gross margin in the statement. With the ongoing weakness of crude oil prices and pretty tame soft commodity markets, are you more relaxed about input price pressure looking forward? Secondly, in terms of process innovation or process engineering in your business, were there any developments in the third quarter where you introduced new lines, robotics or whatever that represents an advancement for the productivity of the business? And lastly, how do you feel you are currently aligned with Superstore SKU rationalization as that progresses quarter by quarter in the UK, please? Thank you.
So, Alistair, do you want to...
Shall I take the gross margin question? So I think, Clive, we feel we have the outlook that we gave in November, I think, really hasn't changed that much. You would expect to see a bit of benefit coming through from oil. There is not always as direct a correlation as you might expect to see between oil and plastics. There's lots of other dynamics that operate in that market. And of course, if you look at what you pay for fuel, a large proportion of it is duty, which therefore doesn't get affected by the oil price moving down. So, but clearly, generally speaking, that's helpful. I think we've also indicated previously that there are one or two commodities where we think prices might actually go up a bit. I think dairy has come down enormously, could go back up a bit, sugar, and we talked previously about sort of vine fruits, which again, given the poor harvest, might be going up. So when we look at the balance of all of that, I think our guidance would be as it was before, which is flat to, if anything, maybe a slight bit of cost inflation that we'll have to deal with as we go through into next year. I think if I take the next one, and then maybe I'm going to pass the SKU one back to Gavin, is on process engineering. I think within the quarter, there is not a single piece of investment that I would pull out. The big program for this year has been the investment at the Stoke factory. That was largely done before we got into the quarter, and so we're getting the savings from that are obviously flowing through. But we are on track to spend the capital budget of $25 million, which is what we've been previously guiding to. And we are getting the benefits and savings that we expect from the cost-saving projects within that total.
With regard to SKU rationalisation, as you know full well, we are serious and substantive advocates of this. We kind of led the way. And we will be net beneficiaries. That's the contextual point. I suppose the second one is, while there are some high-profile milestone rationalization. They're also, it's an ongoing process. I can think that Morrison started this perhaps maybe 9 months ago. We'll probably come back to it again this year. A lot of people have talked about Tesco. I think there's a Tesco cake or sweet treats program underway that'll impact the market in this quarter. And a lot of conversations about Asda or discussions in the press about Asda as well. So I suppose the second point is that there are a multitude of different initiatives in the major retailers. It is a big trend. It's not a big one-time event because sometimes a retail, Tesco being a good example, did grocery, you know, in the middle part of last year and, you know, is getting to cake this year. And I think Tesco are now talking about a second or a review of the first reset, you know, in July 2016. So it's a rolling process. If and the only qualification I ever give, if it's done with the consumer and as the ultimate arbiter of the outcome in terms of, e.g., what sells and rotation based on consumer and share, then Premier will always be a net beneficiary. And so, you know, we remain a big supporter of it, and we'll work very positively and indeed encourage our major customers to engage in these programs.
Okay. Thank you very much, gentlemen, for everything there.
And your next question comes from the line of Charlie Mills. Please ask your question.
Katie, I wonder if sort of the light of the December weather, if you had maybe shifted some of that spend out of Q3 and into Q4, or maybe you'd already booked it all and you weren't particularly able to change it, but just timing between Q3 and Q4 on marketing is the question.
I think largely, Charlie, it didn't change from what we expected for the very reason that you give, that you typically have to book media a couple of months ahead. So you can't. We tend not to be chopping and changing the media spend at very short notice like that.
Okay.
And your next question comes from the line of Rebecca Clement.
Hi, guys. Two questions from me. The first one is, can you discuss, obviously we know the sales numbers, but can you talk a little bit about what you experienced from a volume perspective in your branded businesses? And my second question is related to deflation. Given that the market has this underlying deflation, but you guys are a branded product, I would think that there would be margin benefit to you, but also are you actually getting pushback on what your prices are, or have you been able to maintain price, i.e. does deflation really impact you guys from a price perspective? Thanks.
Okay, it's slightly difficult to answer one question without answering the other one.
Well, why don't you answer them together?
So, I mean, I think broadly speaking, what we would say is that although we don't publish separate volume figures to the value figures, you would see a similar story between the two. And therefore, I mean, do we get pushback on price? Well, of course, we have important customers who have negotiating power, and of course we get pushback on price. But broadly speaking, we've been maintaining our position, and the story on volume is the same as value.
Okay, great, thanks.
And will Martin Dubu please press star 1 for your question? Martin Dubu, please press star 1 for your question.
Hello,
and your next question comes.
Hi, Martin.
Hi. Sorry, I think there's been a few problems. Hello, morning, everybody. Two questions, one of which really just picks up on the question Rebecca has just asked. Just to sort of try and deepen the question, in terms of the retailer pricing climate, are you seeing any change of negotiating or pricing tone? I mean, as you've touched on, we've seen Asda committing to a further $500 million or so of price investment. You know, Tesco is a constantly moving feast. Just how would you characterize and describe the negotiating climate as we carry on? And the second one is just a very specific one. Ambrosia ice cream, how are you doing that? Is that a co-pack, or are you investing in new capacity there, or just how's that being delivered?
I'll do those two then. I think the negotiating climate, and this is been a really important insight for everybody who's been on the journey with Alistair and I in the last couple of years. It remains intense. I mean, it is intense, but the key insight there is, you know, is intense and remains intense. So it's part of the running rate of managing this business and interacting, as Alistair said, with some big and powerful customers. So high intensity, but you know, consistent and constant high intensity, no change in the level. I think that would be my broad summary. And I think, you know, we did tip our hat to the gross margin point, as somebody picked up earlier in the call, which is always, you know, we did consciously, because if a change of intensity manifested itself, it would manifest itself, you know, in a gross margin percentage. So hopefully that's reassuring. Contract pack is the answer to your second question. We're proud and frugal with our capital investment. And when it comes to new products, we very often source them initially from contract packers. In this case, you know, I it would not be appropriate for Premier at this point to be laying down, you know, production capability in this area. So we have a contract pack agreement, and that's how we're supplying this proposition.
And Gavin, if I could quickly follow up, I mean, you say the environment's intense, but thinking about Tesco specifically, you know, we hear talk that Dave Lewis's influence has been to broaden the dimensions of negotiation away from pure price and terms to more of a sort of total supply chain focus. Is you know, as well as a change of tone, are you seeing any change in the dimensions of negotiation, either in Tesco or elsewhere?
I think we've seen some changes specifically over the last year. I think towards consistent and towards the kind of dialogue that we have about category. You know, I think in the past it would have, so we were probably in the right place in terms of our repositioning the company as a category driver, you know, right back nearly 2 years ago. And our brands and our initiatives are all not just about driving, you know, our own revenue and volume, but also the categories we share with our retailers. So I think, you know, maybe we, if that was where we started, you know, that tends to be where a number of our big customers are moving. I suppose the second one I might say precisely is to get revenue into this industry. We definitely, our retailer partners also need to innovate, because they will not be raising prices, on average will not be raising prices. And so I think there's probably even more openness to innovation and new products, because genuinely differentiated new products that, in our case, you've seen some of our presentations before, have an increased pence per bite or pence per meal served or cooking occasion, then those are all, they're all disproportionately relevant to the environment that our customers find themselves in.
Okay, thank you. Thanks for that.
And your next question comes from the line of Nicola Mallard.
Hi, morning, guys. Couple of questions from me. Just on the private label in grocery, what specifically was driving that? You do talk about mince pies, obviously, and sweet treats, but there was a reasonable performance in the private label on grocery too. And secondly, any reason why you haven't done any guidance for Q4? I mean, it was unusual, I guess, to see you guide on Q3 in the interim statement. Is the nervousness over the weather behind that, in terms of it's obviously difficult to predict? And then finally, any view from Premier on a sugar tax?
Well, I'll do the first and the third and do them together then. Desserts are an area. We, you know, predominantly our private label focus, as you know, is in sweet treats, where we've determined we've got scale and we've learned more and more that, you know, we can service intelligently sweet treats, private label opportunities at not far off our the margins of our branded business, and with a significant kick kind of operational leverage in our three cake bakeries. So this remains the focus. And by the way, just to give some context to that, we were looking a year ago at probably private label trends that were minus 10 in aggregate for Premier. And you're right, that's why you're asking the question. The trends in this quarter or a year or so later are quite different. So it is, to restate, predominantly a focus on sweet treats and cakes for all the reasons I just discussed. Mm-hmm. So then we look through the grocery portfolio a little bit in a little bit more selective fashion, but we do find opportunities, having done that, in desserts. And so desserts, to your question, for grocery in this quarter. The sugar area, well, I personally and Premier as a company have been leading the charge in the industry, on behalf of the industry, corralling industry to be proactive, because I do think the whole subject of obesity is a big issue. I think it's rather broader than sugar. You know, it's really about calories. And, you know, the government is moving towards, as you know, a strategy for youth obesity, and although it's been much delayed, you know, certainly in the next 6 months, it will see the light of day. A sugar tax is much discussed. We would not advocate a sugar tax. We think that would be, you know, more about headlines and less about effectiveness. We think that we will continue to drive, first of all, the industry for a kind of multi-point action plan, and then when that surfaces, you know, we may well top that up with some specific commitments from Premier. So we are happy to give you a very precise example, and have suggested to the industry and through to government that Premier would commit to targets in terms of sugar reduction for desserts and for cake. We would do that, and we hope that the industry does that. If the industry doesn't sign up for that, then we will commit to those at the right time publicly on our own. We also are extremely focused on a critical thing that government is very interested in, which is portion control. So about 40% of our cake products are now in single-serve, single-wrapped portions, so 40% of our cake business. That is obviously where we're investing significantly. You know about the investment in Carlton, and, you know, we're prepared to commit to get that to 50%, and that's absolutely in the center of one of the most important areas that government is driving for, and a number of other commitments in terms of our proportion of our NPD and the direction of travel of our NPD in terms of health and well-being. So specifically sugar tax, your question, we would not support. We think it's just, you know, it would miss the point. You need to hit multiple different actions to make a difference, and we will continue to drive the industry. And based on where the industry comes out in the next few weeks, then if we would believe we need to go further, we'll go public with what Premier will do in addition.
Okay, perfect. Thank you.
Shall I, Nicola, take your middle question? I mean,
yeah.
It has never been our practice to provide guidance on a quarterly basis, and I think it's not something that we want to start doing as a matter of routine. The smaller the unit of time over which you forecast, the more you are exposed to vagaries of that particular period, you know, whether it be weather or promotional or whatever it might be. So it's not something we've ever done routinely. It's not something that I think is sensible to get into. We did make an exception to that at the interim, as you rightly say. It was really driven by the fact that there were some, you know, some phasing issues, you know, in terms of where sweet treat sales. We wanted to highlight our expectations at that point in time, so we had a specific reason for doing it, but it's never been our routine practice, and it's not something that we would expect to be doing as a matter of going forward.
Perfect. Thanks very much, Alistair.
And your next question comes from the line of Declan Morrissey.
Good morning. morning, Alistair. Good morning, Gavin. Just two questions from me. First question, just you called out some of the brands and the categories that underperformed your expectations due to weather. And I was just wondering, with regard to those categories, have you been left, you know, a long inventory, and are you going to have to run promotional, maybe less favorable promotional strategies to get rid of that inventory? And just the second question then, relating to NPD, I'm just wondering, has the total SKU count in the business started to creep up again, or have you been replacing existing SKUs with the new SKUs? And I suppose a more broader question: Are you happy with the economics of all your SKUs at this stage, or is there still room for some volume pruning?
Mm-hmm. I mean, I think the answer is that we are not long of inventory relative to where we'd expect it to be. I mean, if you think of, for instance, Ambrosia, that was a conscious decision and built into our plans. We actually went live earlier in last year, so at Easter last year, with quite a significant investment in our planning systems, and that's beginning to give us better ability to really plan through the supply chain. So we're not sitting here thinking that we have an inventory problem going into the fourth quarter. In terms of your question on SKU count, I think, broadly speaking, having been through that decline, we're about where we feel we need to be. We've got some coming in and some going out. It's at about the right level. I mean, at the end of the day, if we have a really good idea for a new product, we're not going to not launch it just because it's another SKU. But in terms of the degree of complexity within the business, we feel that we are in broadly about the right place.
Okay, thank you.
And your next question comes from the line of Chris Wickham.
Hi, and thanks. Just want to get back onto one thing. Just on that private label movement, obviously you had the sweet treats and the mince pies. What's the sort of normal level that we'd go back to? Because I'm presuming it would be trending down slightly. And I was just wondering also, I mean, because so often now with private labels, it's not a question of saying, oh, well, you know, sort of brands is good and private labels are necessarily bad, because you've got quite a lot of bespoke work done there, and sometimes you do end up with better margins. In certain cases, you can end up with better margins on private label, but I was just wondering if you give us some sort of indication on margin there. And then I was also just asking, really, just in terms of what you're sort of seeing in the current climate of you know, not saying that you're in any sort of have any sort of major pressing M&A program right now, but I mean, are you finding there are businesses out there that might be of interest that are just suddenly coming up at levels that you hadn't previously expected and much more attractive levels?
So there were kind of two questions on P&L. I'll do the sales one and maybe let Alistair do the margin one.
Yeah.
I think it is, which is why I've emphasized it earlier. 2 years into this project, since the refinancing, or nearly, I think it is clear we see more in cake, predominantly in cake, in sweet treat, more private label opportunities than we ever saw 2 years ago. And we probably understand better ever than before, as we've demonstrated in Carlton at our capital markets review back in the summer, that the positive operational level, financial leverage we have in our cake bakeries as a result. So whereas we probably would have forecast 2 years ago private label to decline maybe 10% a year, I think that's kind of order of magnitude where we were. I think in cake, there's no reason why we shouldn't grow modestly going forward. So that's quite a big change. And then Alistair commenting on the profitability of that growth.
Well, I think on the, you know, in terms of the margin on the private label business, I mean, I think the first thing to say is that we have some very strict internal criteria and thresholds that we apply. And if we can't hit those required returns, then we don't do it. I think that's the first thing to say. You are right that you would typically expect to see the margin on the private label business to be lower than on branded. That is an absolutely fair observation. I think the only build I'd make on that is that observation is truer in the grocery business than it is in the sweet treats business. But of course, the grocery business is a higher margin business. So I guess it's probably not surprising that the margins are closer within the sweet treats business. But we only do private label business where we're happy with the overall margin on that. And then you had a question on M&A. Shall I take that one? I don't really have a profound observation on the M&A market. There's stuff that's going on. I'm not sure that it's at a particularly different level to what you've seen previously. I think from where Premier sits, our position is very much that the business has been through enormous change over the years. We regard that change period as over, and our focus and our attention is on running the business that we own today, and not really on M&A. Now, of course, we make sure we stay alert to what is out there. It's very important that we know what's happening in the market, and we make sure we know. But the focus of the management team is on running today's business.
Sure. That's great. Thank you very much indeed for that.
And your next question is from Nilesh Desai.
Hi, sorry, my question's been answered. Thank you.
Okay.
Your next question is from Matt Robbins.
Hi, you've talked about OXO and Bisto, but can you talk about market share in the other categories, the other branded categories during the warm weather?
I think the issue has been more about the size than anything to do with share. To give you an example, like meals and soups, if you wanted a specific example, in December the volume in the category was down about 10%. So I would guide you more to the impact of weather on market size rather than market share. Market share was not a material issue. I would say the only exception to that would be probably the brand of, again in 2016, that we most need to address is Hatchlers. So the two brands have been waiting their time in the queue as we work our way through our portfolio have been Ambrosia, which I touched on earlier, which is a stable share that certainly needs to be renovated and reactivated in the fashion we have some of our other brands. And then Bachelors, which not only was in a very weak sector in December, but has slipped in share, I would say a number of years probably, and is the next big one in line for the marketing and innovation makeover that we've been rolling through our portfolio. But when you think about the business in total, Matt, we shouldn't be thinking about any share issues, excepting Atlas. We should be thinking about in December an impact on the size of the total market. That was the material event.
Great. And then just secondly, on the finishing the securitization program, I wondered if you just don't feel you need that liquidity or whether it's going to be replaced with anything else.
So it's not going to be replaced with anything else. We have adequate liquidity within the other facilities that we put in place when we did the refinancing. This was put in place when Premier was in a very different financial position to what it's in today. And we regard this as another step to getting the company back into a sort of more normal funding position. It's a program that, in fact, was undrawn at the half year. It's quite complicated to administer, so we felt it was right to cancel it altogether. It has no impact on net debt, but it just makes life simpler and more efficient for us to run our funding.
Great, thank you.
And your next question comes from the line of Arthur Reeves.
Hello, thanks for the question. You talk about international growing at 10%. I know it's a tiny part of your business, but have you got plans to make it any more significant?
Yes, Arthur, Kevin, we haven't put in the public domain a specific target, but it's as you say, it's a really rather disproportionately small relative to other British food companies. Part of our sales are around about 5%, so it should be materially bigger than 5%. So we are investing to make that happen, and you know, we have moved our headcount roughly from 10 to 30, so that's 20 incremental people in, you know, in the last year, and disproportionately in the last 6 months. And we have invested in marketing. Had new marketing director join on Monday, and we have invested in, you know, logistics and our operational capability to support it, and now in increasingly investing in sales resources and particularly sales resources in the marketplace. So we already have put sales resources for the first time in Ireland, four people, about 18 months ago. Now the Middle East, and during the next 6 months or so, we will put sales resources in, you know, more than likely in two other markets. So the answer is a big opportunity, and we're investing people to make that happen, and we're beginning to get growth as a result.
Thank you.
And your next question comes from the line of Tom Gibney.
Good morning. I was just wondering, could you explain, is there something that has gone better than expected for you to maintain your profit expectations in spite of the weaker than expected December?
Well, I mean, I think when you look at a business like this, there are all sorts of changes as you navigate in towards the year end. So obviously there are you know, things that have gone, for instance, in the cost area that might be a bit better. We've obviously sold a bit less than we thought. On balance, we feel able to maintain the same guidance.
Okay. All right. Thanks. To what extent is Asda's recent ramping up a bit price investment focus on your products? Do you have a sense yet whether you will effectively over or under index with respect to that additional price cutting?
I don't think we do, to be honest. I think the simple answer is, you know, this is something we'll have a better line of sight on in the next 6 months.
Okay. Thanks very much.
And your next question is from the line of Helen Rodriguez.
Hi there. Sorry if you've asked this because I missed the beginning of the call, but I just wondered if you had any thoughts around Lloyd Grossman, or if there's any other particular brands that that perhaps underperformed a little bit more than any of the others.
I wouldn't say anything specific. I mean, we are now Lloyd Grossman is one of the brands we've started marketing after many years of not marketing it. We've started launching new products, both a milk product and some pouch products. So, you know, it's very much one of the focus brands, and you know, we're delighted with the way way the brands responded. I mean, the cooking sauce category is affected to some degree by climate, if it's hot or cold. So it wasn't entirely helped by December. But no, the brand Lloyd Grossman is in rude health, and we're very happy with where it's headed.
So then in that case, was it really Batchelors that was the one that was softer?
Batchelors for sure is our, you know, weakest of our big brands, compounded by the fact, as we touched on earlier in the call, that the category that Batchelors sits in, like meals and soups, was the category that is always the most weather dependent, and that was minus 10 as a category in December. So Batchelors was our weakest performer. Ambrosia, as we said in the trading statement, we made some conscious decisions to take the foot off the gas somewhat in terms of promotional intensity. So Ambrosia's performance, you know, at a revenue line, not as strong as it has been in the past. But those would be the only two that I would point to.
Thank you.
And you have a follow-up question from Martin Deboo.
Morning again. Sorry for the follow-up, but thanks for taking it. Just follows up Arthur's question on international. I've noticed the growth rate on international slowed quite significantly from H1 Q2 into Q3. I don't want to over-torture sort of quarterly growth rates in a small part of the business, but I think just for good order, I should ask, you know, was it a tough comp, or is that business now entering a sort of phase of more maturity where we'll expect lower growth rates, or just what explains the Q3 performance in international
I think the answer, Martin, is you have to be very careful about drawing too much conclusions from a quarter sale in a very small part of the business. Because you are literally getting to the point where a few hundred thousand pounds of a shipment going or not going can actually affect that. So I think looking at the trend over a longer period is the right way to approach this.
Okay, and on that, Alistair, should we think of it as quite lumpy for the moment? Are you having to do sort of consignments to sales agents and things like that? Is that the way to think about that business, or
there are some elements that are a bit lumpy. Shipments to Australia were the obvious example.
Yes, okay. All right, that's very...
You bulk it up and send it out, and, you know, you try and get it out in one shipment.
Yeah, okay, it's helpful to understand that. Thanks.
And again, if you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone. Again, that is star 1 on your telephone.
I think, moderator, I know it's a busy morning for an awful lot of people on this call. It's not just Premier Foods who've put... a public statement out. So I think we are pretty well up to, we're over our 45 minutes. I think we should thank everybody for their attention. Appreciate your attention, time and support, and have a good day.
And that does conclude our conference for today. Thank you for participating. You may all disconnect.